Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Jane Maguire.
Today we're speaking with Rena McGregor about the pros and cons of fasted running. Jane, what's new? What's going on?
It's been a while, hasn't it? I feel like I haven't been on for a few weeks. All good. I'm currently, you can probably hear, a bit croaky, recovering from a chest infection, which isn't fun. Got some antibiotics, which are great, and I'm on the mend, but it's not COVID, so that's the good news, I think.
That's good news, isn't it?
Took a week off running, which was a bit stressful, actually, but just couldn't breathe, Rick. So I think if you can't breathe walking the dog,
shouldn't be running.
It's not really time to go for a run, is it? So tried for the first time ever to really take a proper week off and not even try going out for a run. And I did my first kind of 3 miles back today, and it's still pretty hard to breathe. So we're not out of the woods yet, but we're getting there. How about you? How's the post-knee op?
Yeah, so it's been 2 weeks since the knee operation. I'm back to, like, I'm walking kind of pain-free, no crutches, right. So that's good. And I think having talked to a few people, I talked with Robbie Britton, who's been on here a few times, and he's had a similar operation done. He said it's probably 6 weeks before you can do your first run. And it's pretty important with this stuff to do, like, all the mobility stuff that you're told to do, because I think actually it's quite easy to get about 90% of your movement and stuff back. But actually, the final 10% is something you have to be quite diligent about. So I'm already sort of looking at races, you know, for the summer and the autumn, and I think I will come back with a renewed gratitude for running. So it's actually, I'm actually feeling pretty good about it. And I guess the fact that sort of spring is kind of around the corner now is, I always find this quite a hopeful part of the year when you're kind of coming towards the end of February. I kind of think, okay, great, right, what's going to be in the diary? How's the joy plan, very quickly?
The joy plan is going well, actually. I had this urge. This is probably when I'm not blaming this class for getting sick, but the day I got sick, I was like, I'm going into London because I've got some meetings and I really want to do like a wanky, can I say that on the podcast?
I think that's okay. Yes, yeah, that's okay. Yeah.
Like one of those like really expensive fitness classes that you spend a fortune on, but I normally avoid like the plague. But I was like, do you know what? I miss doing that. And I loved it. I was in like a room, I think it's the first class I've done since before the pandemic, and just being in a room of other people all working out, I was like, this is great. I have really missed this. And I was really surprised. And I was like, wow, the joy plan is great because I followed my gut and I wanted to do this. Yeah. And then I got ill. So I don't know if that was my body being like, chill out. The joy plan, you know, you've really gone from 0 to 100 here, but it might have just been being back in London. Do you know what I mean? My immune system. Yeah, I'm like, when you send a baby to nursery, I'm not built for the city yet. But I'm looking forward to kind of doing some more classes and carrying on with the joy plan. And I'm going to try and do the Landmarks Half, which will be like the first kind of running event I've done on the joy plan.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking at the moment, the plan is just to get over a chest infection and try and enjoy it. But we'll see.
It's a beautiful route. I've never done it, but everyone does it. It's like a sightseeing, because it's not often that central London roads get closed like that. And it's not even necessarily that true for the marathon. You don't really get the great sights until, what, mile 25 and 26, really.
Yeah.
But I think it takes in a lot of the kind of classic tourist sites. So.
And they're actually, Landmarks are doing, which, they, you know, I think it's quite cool. They're doing a local Landmarks 10K challenge, which is to kind of run a 10K plotting around the local landmarks in your area, which I think is quite cute.
That's cool.
So you can kind of, you know, maybe you live near a Banksy, or maybe you live near a beautiful cathedral or by the Thames, and you can plot a route, take some pictures, send them in, and I think you get a medal. I might be wrong, check that, but I think you're pretty sure you get a medal, which is like a cool kind of virtual challenge that you can maybe do if you're not, if your joy plan means you're not comfortable going to races yet, and I totally feel you. That could be like a cute kind of...
Yeah, that's nice, that, yeah.
I quite liked it. So
yeah, celebrating your neighbourhood. I like that. I think that's good.
Yeah.
So I've been looking around. So part of my job is obviously looking after the warm-up section of Runner's World print magazine. And that's where we put like some of the newsy stuff, but also some of the like the kind of workouts and the new studies and that sort of stuff. And one that I found was called, it's called 3 Minute Mountain Legs. And this is like a sort of strength and conditioning workout. If you haven't got any hills near you, but you want to get good on hills, or maybe you even sort of signed up for a mountain race. And a lot of top mountain runners do this. There's a guy called Jason Schlarb, and he's won things like the Hard Rock 100, which is pretty much about as hard as it gets in ultra running. Pretty hardcore. It's 3 minutes. It's only two exercises, and there's no weights involved. So it's like, it's a reverse lunge that you do, and then you've got to do a step up. So you've got to find some steps, and the step up is quite rapid. But anyway, if you Google 3 minute mountain legs, it's there's a YouTube video on it. It'll come straight up. And it's what I like about it is I always think with strength and conditioning stuff, it needs to be easy, simple, time efficient, not really requiring too much equipment. Otherwise, I think people end up doing it for a little bit and then just completely stop doing it because it's like too much of a stress. And I kind of think stuff that's like, yeah, this is 3 minutes of your day, it's effective. You're not going to be ticking off every single, you know, area of the leg that you should be strengthening, but this is way better than doing nothing. And I think too often it's a case of this kind of gold standard that we hold up for people of like, you should be lifting heavy weights twice a week. Actually doing something is actually better than being intimidated by that and doing nothing. Do you know what I mean?
Do you know what I like about it? It reminds me of, I used to be obsessed with step aerobics, and it sounds just like a step class.
It's quite similar to a step class, yeah.
Nothing has ever hurt my legs more than a step aerobics class. And I've run a marathon, so I can say that. I can, you know, put that on a t-shirt. Step aerobics, absolute killer. So maybe we should all buy one of those 90s videos and step and forget about going to the gym.
Sort of Jane Fonda videos, yeah. I think that's it.
I think let's get some ankle weights and dig them out, because that sounds great.
So we're going to talk about fasted running with Rini, and she's like a real expert on all things nutrition. She's going to be the new nutrition columnist for Runner's World, which is a great scoop for us. Have you ever done any? You ever experimented with fasted running? It's not something that I've sort of done some stuff like that, but I haven't really kind of gone Tuesday, that's fasted day. You know?
Yeah, I think I've done this by accident, because I hate the feeling of running on a full stomach. It makes me feel really sick. So I think I'm very often I'll get up and just go for a run without even having a sip of water. So I think I have done this, but not consciously. And I also, you know, when people listen to what Rini has to say, I think I shouldn't be doing this, because I think I could probably be a better runner if I did have like half a banana or something before I went out, because what she says makes a lot of sense. You know, I don't feel great afterwards, and I probably don't run as well as I could because I'm fasted. I just have always got it into my head that I feel better doing that. So I don't know. Maybe I have done it by mistake, but I'll change my mind after this, which might be what a lot of listeners do too.
Yeah, I hope so. I think it could be a bit of a badge of honor with someone. It's like, yeah, I don't eat and drink anything over like, you know, if I'm going out for like 70 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
And actually... yeah, maybe a little bit of fasted exercise is okay. But I think, yeah, something that's very easy to sort of misinterpret or...
I think so. I think it's like...
extreme on.
There's a real trend, or there was a trend, about not drinking on the run. Have I made that up? Or people kept talking about that, didn't they? That you didn't need water when you were running. And I kind of dodged that one. So maybe I've accidentally stumbled into this one too. I don't know. But I remember something about, oh, you don't need to carry water. I was like, oh, well... if you're thirsty, have a drink.
Again, it's like a lot of things. I think it comes to there's this sort of like little grain of truth in some stuff where like there's been some studies to show that you should drink to thirst, right? Rather than like down in 2 liters every mile or whatever. And I think that's true, but it gets kind of taken to like, yeah, I should go out with like no water for 2 hours because the body doesn't need it. And it's like, no, that's not what science is saying at all. But it's great to talk to Rini because actually like she's completely qualified in this area. And I think there's probably too much kind of self-appointed experts, whereas Rini's actually someone who, has got all the, you know, her CV is like pretty much unparalleled in this area. So great to get her on. And let's get on our guest of the week. What do you reckon?
Yeah, let's do it. Guest of the week. Here in the studio. Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete. Could be a physio. Or a complete unknown.
Our guest this week is a leading sports dietitian specialising in eating disorders and athlete health and performance. She's worked with both everyday runners and Olympic athletes and is here today to talk about the pros and cons of fasted running. So Rini McGregor, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Thank you for having me, Rick.
Could we start by defining what people tend to mean when we use the term fasted running?
Of course, yeah. So I think what's happened is fasted running has become this term that people used basically when they, you know, they do their training probably first thing in the morning, they get up and they go. And because they haven't had anything to consume since their previous meal or their previous the previous night, it's counted as fasted running because generally speaking, if we haven't eaten anything for 4 hours, it's sort of counted as fasted. So I think that's where it's sort of come from. But actually, when we look at it from a performance point of view, it's actually probably come from a term scientifically that we use, which is called training low, which is slightly different to fasted training.
Is this a new thing or is this something we've been doing forever and people are just suddenly talking about it again?
I think some people always train, have always trained early morning, and that's what they've done. But I think the more we've become focused, I'm going to use the word fixated a little bit as well, on performance and nutrition, and the more people are getting in sort of involved and thinking about it, the more complicated we've actually made it. So I know, like, if we go back in the day and we talk about like Ron Hill, for example, I know he used to do a lot of his marathon training in a fasted state. However, he would also then come home and consume, you know, huge quantities of carbohydrate afterwards, and he wouldn't do every run in that state. So I think what's interesting is that, like with everything in modern society, somebody's taken something actually that could be useful and scientific, dumbed it down so much so that now everybody feels that they almost have to do every single run in that state. Now, you know, sometimes we do it because it's convenient, but I think there's quite a lot of runners who think they need to do every run in a fasted state in order to get the benefits of what they think they're going to get from a fasted run.
So what are the purported benefits then, Rini, of like what is the kind of the carrot everyone's chasing when they want to do fasted training?
So if we go back to a little bit about, like, if we look at physiology of humans, we, generally speaking, our body likes to work on carbohydrate. That's the fuel that it prefers. It's the fuel that's easy, it's broken down, and it means that our muscles get energy delivered very, very quickly, and we can maintain a certain pace. The problem with humans is that we only have a certain amount of storage within our body to actually hold that amount of carbohydrate. So if we have full glycogen stores, and when I mean full glycogen stores, that means we have actually consumed enough carbohydrate to basically fill all our glycogen stores in our muscles and in our liver, then we've probably got enough energy to last us around 90 to 120 minutes and when we're running at a fairly moderate intensity. So something like, you know, 6 or 7 out of 10 in terms of exertion. So if you're running any faster than that, you're going to use that tank even quicker. So that's the thing, like that's the thing to be kind of understand. Now, what the theory behind fasted training is that if we train our bodies to use more fat for fuel, again, humans have a really big storage of fat within our bodies. We've all got lots of adipose tissue and it's all there sitting, waiting to be used, and provides energy in, you know, like fat gives more energy per gram than carbohydrate to a certain degree. So the idea is that if we can train our bodies to use more fat for fuel, then we can spare our glycogen stores. So in those endurance events like the marathon and above, you can actually go a lot longer without needing to worry about your fuel running out. But the problem with the theory is that fat's not that easy to break down. It takes much more time and it's much, much slower. So actually, if you're running fast, it's not the ideal form of energy. But if you're running slower, then yes, there's a possibility you'll get a benefit. But I think, again, I don't want to be somebody that simplifies this down and kind of says when you run slow, you use fat, and when you run fast, you use carbs, because that's not how it works. Like, it's a continuum. We're always using a bit of fat and a bit of carbohydrate. However, the faster you go and the quicker your body needs energy, the more likely you are to rely on carbohydrate for fuel.
Do you think there's a trend at the moment? I feel like we've gone through, you know, real diet trends where suddenly we stopped eating carbs and now intermittent fasting and 5-2 diets and things like that are so popular. They're in every magazine, every Instagram post you see. What is your position? Do you think this is something that, you know, the running world's kind of taken for a little bit, but in a few years' time, we'll all be eating more carbs than ever? Do you know what I mean? Do you think it is just a fad, or do you think what's your position on it, I guess I'm trying to say?
So I'm very anti low carb diets, and I'm also pretty anti intermittent fasting. And I'm, you know, very happy to say that on record. And in fact, you know, I think Rick knows I've got a new book coming out, and I actually talk about all these aspects, like why these diets are around, why people choose them, and then actually, are there ever any benefits to them? And, you know, I'm not saying that they're not beneficial at times. It's for some people, they might be at certain times, but it really is very individual. I think, to answer your question, Jane, I suppose humans tend to be like sheep. We sort of follow. So if someone does something and they've had a great result, then we all believe that if we all do the same, then that we'll get the same result. And I think social media heightens that, because we're constantly comparing and we're constantly being provided with information 24/7. But again, if you think about social media, it also creates a lot of confirmation bias. So if you have decided that fasted training or intermittent fasting, or even like being plant-based, is the way you want to go, you're more likely to follow individuals that do that. So all you're getting is that same information reiterated again and again and again, which of course then becomes your beliefs and your reality. And you know, it's hard then to sort of get a much more varied and diverse block of information that you can actually make an informed decision of. So I think, I'll be honest, if you look at the science, there's absolutely nothing to back up a low-carb diet, particularly for runners, even endurance runners. There is, like we said, this concept of training low, where you can do a couple of sessions a week in what we would call a carb-depleted state. So you would do a training session, but you have to be really careful about the length of time that session is. So we'd say no longer than a couple of hours max. And that's also for somebody who's really well trained. So if you're new to the running world, we'd say no more than an hour. It needs to be at a threshold that is actually very, very low intensity. So where you can have conversations and you're not out of breath. So we sort of, you know, looking at sort of 5 to 6 out of 10 in terms of exertion. And you do need to make sure that you then replenish the amount of carbs that your body would require for the rest of the day after the training session, you know, over the next, whatever, 12 hours of that day that you're going to be consuming food. And these are really, really important points if you want to get that adaptation that everybody thinks they're going to get from doing a fasted session. So there are definite opportunities to use this method to support training and to get adaptation and to improve your ability to use more fat for fuel. However, it is really, really, you have to be really careful about when you do it. It's not something you should do every single day. And in fact, we know that if you do it every single day, there's a big possibility that you can actually sort of down-regulate and depress your immune system. So you put your body at a higher risk of being stressed and then actually mitigating any adaptation from it. We also know that for women particularly, it could be quite detrimental to hormones. It is detrimental to men as well, but with women it's much more it's much quicker. It's much more, our bodies are much more sensitive because of estrogen. Our bodies are much more sensitive. And so we will respond to a carb depleted position a lot quicker than our male counterparts who will eventually, but it might be 2 or 3 years down the line. Whereas with women, we'll pick it up quite quickly.
You've worked, Rini, as I said in the intro, with like everyday runners and also real sort of top athletes. Is this fasted training something that is actually popular among the elite runner, or is it actually more something that's kind of purported by the kind of the influencer, and it's not something that perhaps most athletes actually do too much of?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Rick. And I would say working with the athletes, the elite level athletes I have, is often because they do have a sports science team around them. You know, they're being provided that informed information that actually you're going to do this session in this state, but only because this is what we're trying to encourage you to, you know, adapt to. But this is what you need to do afterwards. So actually, it's not actually that popular in elite level running, but it is definitely something that has banded down. So I think sometimes even elite athletes, especially now with the influence of social media, may become affected by what they read and see as well. And you know, they may have that conversation with their coach. And if that coach then doesn't have a team like a physiologist or a dietitian or, you know, someone that they can then go and have a conversation with, they might go, well, let's give it a go. And then that can be something that is then promoted. And what's interesting is, I don't know if you ever noticed, that even when an athlete does promote something, often they only promote it for a short period of time because usually they realize it doesn't work and then it's no longer promoted anymore. So it kind of demonstrates that, you know, again, someone might try something but realizes soon that it doesn't support their training, because it's actually really difficult to hit the paces you want to hit if you're in a carb depleted state. So yeah, I'd say it's much more recreational influencer runner than it is elite level runner.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I'm someone who has suffered with eating disorders for a large chunk of my life, and luckily not anymore. But I wonder whether things like this are a slippery slope to, oh, if I can skip breakfast and go for a run and I've burnt this many calories, I'll then have a lighter lunch. Oh, now are they a slippery slope into more dangerous things, which we know are very common in sport and especially the athlete world?
Yeah, I mean, again, a really good observation. I suppose it's, if we look at eating disorders, or we look at individuals that have a tendency to have a difficult relationship with food and exercise, there's so many factors that we have to take into consideration. Obviously, often individuals have a genetic susceptibility. That's not to say that if you've got that genetic susceptibility, you're going to have a problem. But I think they have that genetic susceptibility. And if that's put in the right environment, and then we throw in modern society, it's those three things that then influences behavior. So, you know, again, if we think about human behavior, all human behavior has a purpose. And often that purpose is protection. So as an individual, if you're experiencing what we term in the kind of psychology world as emotional risk. So, you know, you're noticing you're experiencing criticism or rejection or abandonment or not feeling good enough or whatever it might be. You don't want to experience that. You want to avoid that. And often our behaviors around food and exercise can temporarily help us to avoid those emotional risk factors. And so we then learn that that's the case, and that becomes a learned behavior that, you know, as sadly you probably found out, Jane, leads to more biological and health consequences that are really not worth it. But in that moment, it feels like the right thing to do because it's all you know. So I think it's important to sort of highlight that. But I think the other thing to remember is that often two sort of addictive, I suppose, behaviours tend to sit alongside each other. So something I see is that if someone has had an eating issue previously and it's unresolved, as in they haven't gone away and done the work, they haven't understood the reasons why they've needed that eating behaviour as a coping mechanism, then they'll just go and transfer that to something else. And often we find that's running. And I see that a lot in the work that I do, that we see many, many people that have had eating problems, and then they'll come to us and they're like, I don't have eating problems anymore, but, you know, but they have a real difficult relationship with exercise. And then they come to us because they get injured, and then they realize that actually, oh, I'm not really coping with this at all. So I think those things are really important to understand. And I guess then, yes, if you sort of miss breakfast and go for a run, again, we know that once you start restricting energy availability, it can start to affect how you think. And if you've already maybe previously had those tendencies, then that can fall back in quite quickly. So I think it's really important. I think being human is actually quite exhausting, and we're all often trying to sort of behave in a way that helps us to function. And if you're very self-aware and you know that, you know, you're a perfectionist or you tend to have an obsessive personality, you're kind of always working against that, because you know that once you go down that road, it can actually be quite dysfunctional. So yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm not a big fan of fasted training. I never do fasted training ever. That's not to say that I eat a massive bowl of porridge or have loads of, like, you know, big fry up before I go running. I mean, everything when I'm running or when I'm working with athletes, we'll talk about what might be suitable. So, you know, if it is an easy run, then it might be that you can have a banana and a glass of juice, and you don't need to eat something, you know, really heavy. But actually, if you want to try and do a hard training session, if you're going to do like a tempo or a hill session or, you know, some intervals in the morning, then you really do need to make sure you've got not just energy availability, but that carbohydrate availability. So it might be that you have to use, you know, a gel or a couple of gels. So you have one before you start your training, and then you have one halfway through, in order to make sure that you provide your body with what it needs to be able to deliver the session, but to also then get the hormonal cascade you need afterwards to get that progression, you know, to get that adaptation.
Finally, Rina, you're going to be Runner's World Nutrition Columnist, which is great news, and we're really excited to have you as part of the magazine. I wondered kind of broadly what you kind of hope you might communicate through having a monthly column and the kind of messages that you might get out there, do you think?
Yeah, so firstly, thank you. Yes, I'm very excited. And well, I think one of the things is to bring some of these myths to light. I think that, like you said, you know, there's so much misinformation out there. There are so many people trying to talk about nutrition specifically, but they don't have the right qualifications. And even within nutrition, there are so many areas of speciality. So, you know, I started off with a biochemistry degree, then I did dietetics, and then I did applied sports nutrition. So I got 3 degrees to give me that information. But actually, on top of that, I've had over 10 years of experience working with athletes. And that's very, very different, because human beings are not textbooks. So no matter how much theory you might read, it's not the same as working with somebody. I did a webinar last week, and we were talking about energy availability. And, you know, the theory behind energy availability would suggest that, you know, you only need a small amount of energy per kilogram of body weight. But actually, when you're working in practice with people, that's not the same as a laboratory controlled environment. You know, humans are living in an environment where things constantly changing, and we have stress and we have adrenaline and we have different temperatures. And we have to take that all into consideration. And through experience, you learn that. So I guess, you know, like if I was asked to write a column about children's nutrition, even though my past experience has, I've worked in that field, now I would say, no, I'm really sorry. I haven't had enough experience in that field to be able to do that. And I think I really hope that people start to realize that nutrition is, it's very widespread, it's very complicated, and it's not just as simple as regurgitating information from a journal. It's actually understanding the human body, understanding the psychology, just the way we just discussed as well, and then being able to put all that together in a practical format. So, you know, I think like one of the things that I'm known for is being practical and offering lots of practical solutions. So I'm hoping that with the column, we can not only myth bust, but we can also give people something that they can take away each month and use to help their running and to enjoy their running.
That sounds great, really. And yeah, it's really exciting to have you as part of the mag. So thanks for agreeing to do that. And thanks for coming on the podcast talking about faster running. I hope everyone who's listened to it is in a more informed position to make up their mind about it. So thanks very much for your time.
No, thanks for having me.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runners World podcast. I hope you enjoyed listening and thanks very much.
You can once again subscribe to 3 issues of Runners World for £5. Head to hearstmagazines.co.uk/Runners World podcast to get this listener offer. And yeah, you can listen to the Runners World podcast on Acast, iTunes, all your favourite apps. Search Runners World UK and please do subscribe, and we'll appear at the top of your list every Tuesday morning. So just do it. Thanks for listening and we'll see you next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.